Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram, as we mentioned, is here in studio with us. He's joining us on the local beat. It's brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Stop by and see Jim and Bob and the entire gang. They are in Elyria, right across from the hospital on Broad Street. A trusted name in jewelry. Stop by and you'll see why. Dave, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, and I know I never took any Irish dance classes as a kid, so I'm sorry. You guys are you're gonna have to wait for some wedding way on down the line to ever see me get out and tear up the dance floor.
I just take notes for Matt Douglas. That's all I do. I just take notes and I study every one of his moves. And
don't have to take classes to be an Irish dancer, Dave. You can just go. You just got to feel the music.
Just got to feel the music. There you go. Very well stated. Well, a host of different topics we want to tackle with you over the next few minutes here. I guess let's begin with this. You wrote this story end of last week. What do we know about the candidates in the race for Elyria Municipal Judge?
Well, this in particular was set off by the Lorain County Bar Association issuing their recommendations, not endorsements per se, because it's more so of a kind of vote for who you would recommend, and it's amongst their membership, so it's a membership vote. But basically, the membership were asked to vote between candidate Paul St. Marie and sitting judge Robert White, to vote highly recommended, recommended or not recommended. And this is done pretty much every election season. The bar will put out its recommendations. And at this point, Paul St. Marie, who's the Democrat who's running to take over the unexpired term of another judge that is currently being filled by Judge White, was voted highly recommended by the membership. And Judge White, who's currently sitting and filling out the first half of an unexpired term of Judge Locke Graves, was voted recommended. Both were very appreciative when I reached them on the phone of their fellow attorneys, faith in them and in their abilities. And there were a number of different categories that were rated on, including judicial independence and that kind of thing, and judgment and reasoning and things of that nature and experience. So they will both be on the ballot in November. And we'll be doing, on down the line here, we'll do another story for our election coverage, and our editorial editor and possibly myself will sit in on endorsement interviews and see, Brad Dickin, our editorial editor, will make his decision and put that out there with input from the other editors. So we'll see how it goes.
Interestingly enough, I didn't realize just how close we were to election season, but that's right around the corner.
Yeah. About a month away. Yeah, a little more than a month away.
Wow. So you'll see a lot of those things pop up on your television screen, I'm sure, over the next 4 or 5 weeks. It's commonplace this time of the year. I want to transition into a different story that involves the Lorain County Commissioners. What is their beef with Attorney General Dave Yost?
Well, as many of the listeners will know, and readers of the Chronicle, as well as, just people who are paying attention to the news, we're in the midst of what some elected officials, especially the county commissioners, have called an opioid epidemic. Epidemic just of heroin, fentanyl, prescription painkillers being abused, that kind of thing. So numerous local jurisdictions, local entities and communities have taken the opioid manufacturers to court. Now Attorney General Dave Yost has stepped in and said that his office is the best and most well prepared amongst all the offices in, elected offices in the state of Ohio to see these lawsuits go forward. And many of them being heard in federal court in Cleveland. There were a large number of them that were kind of all squeezed together under onto one judge's docket and will be heard, starting later this month is when the trials are scheduled. But they're suing basically because they allege that the opioid manufacturers mm-hmm. haven't done enough to stop, overprescribing, which leads people into having these addictions. And then when they can't get the opioids anymore, when they can't get the pills or that kind of thing, they then turn to cheaper, illicit narcotics like heroin, which is relatively inexpensive. For those who are buying it on the street, but also again, potentially deadly because you don't know what it's mixed with. But in any case, a lot of the opioid manufacturers, Purdue Pharma, Johnson & Johnson, are being sued by a lot of these local entities. Well, Yost kind of wants to takes the position that I'm best prepared, I'm best situated and suited to handle these, in court. And the commissioners came out with a resolution that said, yeah, we don't agree, you know, because if he takes over that suit and there's a massive judgment, let's assume that happens, well, then are we going to see any of that money, you know, that we want to use in our local communities to fight this epidemic that is affecting us on a local level? Meanwhile, you know, Attorney General Yost is down in Columbus, you know, and yeah, Columbus has its own problems, you know, and Columbus probably has a significant opioid problem. You know, many major cities do, but many local towns do as well. And these towns have sued these manufacturers because they want to be made right and made whole and be able to go and say, okay, now we can open up, you know, a clinic. Now we can open up a treatment facility. Now we can do this, we can do that to help our people on the local level, you know, and also, you know, pay back some of, you know, some of the cost of sending these drugs off to labs and getting them tested and you know, finding out these long, complicated, you know, strings of molecules and things that are in them. And there's hundreds of different kinds of, you know, fentanyl out there. And I mean, that feeds into a little bit into, you know, what the commissioners want to do as well with their crime lab levy, which we can talk about at another time. But that's coming up on the ballot as well. So they want to see the money land where the problem is, not be distributed by the state. And you never know how much of that is going to come back.
Well, and I guess along those same lines, too, you know, I think you could certainly see, at least locally with Lorain County commissioners, you know, they want to see that back here, as you mentioned. I mean, what kinds of amounts of dollars are we talking about here? Has like any of that been released? Like, what kinds of dollar amounts are we discussing?
Well, the best example that I can recall is that a judge in Oklahoma recently ruled that one of these major companies, I want to say it was Johnson & Johnson, I want to say it was J&J, but I'm not absolutely certain about that, so please don't hold me to it, owed the state something north of $500 million. $570 million, I think, which may have been reduced, and I know it'll probably go through appeals and that kind of thing. So I don't know how much the state's actually going to see, but we're talking about multi millions of dollars from these large billion-dollar, you know, international corporations. So I mean, there's the potential for that, but there's no guarantee, and it kind of depends on what happens in, you know, what happens in federal court in Cleveland.
Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joining us on the Local Beat, brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Well, it seems like it's the case that just doesn't want to go away. You know, I feel like we discuss the Gibson's and Oberlin College case constantly, and there was a bit of a new wrinkle thrown into this in a story that you wrote yesterday. Oberlin certainly wanted to bring into the equation some Facebook comments that were made. So for those who haven't had a chance to read up on this, what's the latest now with the Gibson's and Oberlin College case?
So, yeah, we've gone through this quite at length, and I think people have read and listened to and, you know, an awful lot about it. But this is an interesting post-judgment motion that was filed by Oberlin College, wishing to unseal an exhibit that they had originally filed under seal so that it's not public. Basically, under seal just means not for public, you know, distribution. Early on, that basically said, here's, you know, a series of Facebook comments that Alan, the young Alan Gibson, who was the store clerk who was, you know, who was stolen from and assaulted, you know, way back in November of 2016, you know, that he had made online about people stealing and about people, you know, the things that they had done, you know, while he was working as a clerk in the family business. So Oberlin College made the motion to unseal all of that when it was something that they never actually introduced at trial to begin with. Naturally, the attorneys for Gibson's were against that because they said, look, this isn't evidence that you presented. You could have very well, you know, and Alan, you know, Alan the Younger is not a party to the suit. He's not one of the people who, you know, judgment was found in favor of, you know, of him. He is, of course, you know, probably the natural successor to the business when his grandfather and father, you know, pass it on down to him. But at the same time, he's not party to the suit. So why would you seek to introduce, you know, or unseal these statements that he allegedly made after the trial is all over? You could have put him on the stand and questioned him. I mean, that's basically coming from the Gibson's attorney side of things. It's like, why are we even talking about this? So that was some concern that they had. You know, I've read through a lot of documents in this case, and there were some that were unsealed in another judgment that were out there, and it's basically, you know, Alan Gibson saying things like, "Oh, I had a real bad experience," or "I hate it when people steal from my family's small business." This really hurts us, and why do people have to do that? I don't know where Oberlin College was going with that, but Judge Maraldi denied their motion to unseal those other specific comments, and there were many pages of them. To my understanding, there were 30 some pages of Facebook comments that were kind of all smushed together. But the judge said, no, we're not going to unseal that, for public distribution. And again, I think Gibson's attorneys were arguing that, this is just another way to kind of embarrass the family. I mean, that's their argument from their side of things. So it was kind of an interesting, kind of legal move that I didn't quite understand. And I wrote it up real briefly the other day, for our readers. So, stay tuned. I mean, there's more coming.
It's not over.
This is not going to be over for a while. And I have, some news kind of as an aside, not having to do specifically with the case, but, I'll let you guys know when that happens. I got some things going on this week.
All right. So. It's a good tease.
Little bit of a teaser there for you. Sorry about that.
That's good. But will have to check out the Chronicle Telegram to find out.
definitely stay tuned on this one. This will be a real interesting situation.
Teasing is all part of this business, right?
Yeah.
It's a big part of what we do, teasing in many forms and fashions. All right, my friend, we've come to that time of the interview where we ask you for your finest scanner stories of the week. So what kinds of goodies did you come across over the last 7 days?
Hashtag scanner for the win. Quote, her sister is living with her and is not following her guidelines. Unquote. And I'll give you another one real quick if I can find it. Again, from our fine photographer, Andrew Dolph, who works for us on Sundays at the Chronicle taking photos. Overheard on the scanner, quote, there's an officer safety warning at this address, quote, quote, inside a quote, human fluids all over the house. Oh, use extreme caution when entering, unquote, unquote. Yeah. Guys, I'm not going in.
That's one of those when the dispatcher calls you, you say, oh, I'm not really anywhere near that. I'm further down the road somewhere.
Call the fire department.
Oh, man. There you go.
The police, police will say, call fire department, call hazmat first, and then if there's a safety situation, we'll take care of it afterwards.
No, boy. Yikes.
I don't know I don't even want to know what kind of fluids they were talking about.
Well,
can only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a reason that was left out of the tweet. Open to all kinds of interpretation. We'll just go ahead and leave it at that.
Yes.
Dave, as always, my friend, we appreciate the time. We know you're a busy man, so we appreciate you stopping by in studio to share all of your stories and ones that include all kinds of different things, again, that are open to interpretation, especially when it comes to those scanner stories. But as always, thanks for stopping in. We look forward to doing this again next week.
Good to be here, and we'll see you again next week.
Sounds good. Again, that's Dave O'Brien with the Chronicle Telegram joining us on the local beat. It's brought to you by Vandermark Jewelers. Stop by and see them. They are right across from the hospital on Broad Street in Elyria. It's a trusted name in jewelry, and if you stop by, you will see why.